FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's August 14th, 2017. Well, over the weekend, we got to see some civil unrest firsthand. Who started it? He said, she said. It certainly looks like it was the intolerant left doing what they do best, which is nothing, or maybe which is demonstrating, protesting, community organizing, other useful items like that. Questions, comments, email kl@kerrylutz.com. We will answer all. And with us now is John Rubino. Good morning, John.
Morning, Kerry. Yeah, the Charlottesville thing has got to feel like a blast from the past for the South. I used to live in Virginia, and Charlottesville is actually a very progressive town by Southern standards. You know, lots of out-of-state people have moved there and bought nice houses because it's a gorgeous place in the mountains, you know, just a really cool town. If I was going to live anywhere in Virginia, that would be it. And so you get this white supremacist meeting or something that includes white supremacists. I think it had a spectrum. That's the problem with any political movement is you've got people who are more or less reasonable and then people who are crazy kind of lumped into the same group. And so you can't buy into the good ideas without being tainted by the bad ideas, and it makes politics really complicated. And in this case, that's the case of the alt-right. There are a few people who make some good points in the alt-right, and then a lot of crazies, which was what this was to an extent. You know, you had a lot of new variations of the KKK showing up there, and then a lot of people protesting against them. And you had a guy drive a car into the protesters, and so we've got kind of a national crisis brewing here between these two ends of the political spectrum who are not in any way interested in letting the other one speak. Which is exactly what you would expect given a fiat currency world. You know, we're creating so much debt and the system isn't working very well anymore. And that's polarizing the political spectrum. So you've got loud voices on one side, loud voices on the other side. And the middle really doesn't know what it's doing because there are no moderate solutions to our problems. You know, you can't say, oh, let's split the difference and raise taxes a little bit, or let's create a new entitlement that's not as big as the one that the left wants, but that's way bigger than the one that the right wants. And, you know, if we're in the middle, we must be doing something right because everybody's mad at us. Well, that doesn't work because there's no money to pay for any of that stuff, at least not without creating huge amounts of new currency and new debt, which debilitates the system further. So we're in a place now where nothing is working and everybody's looking for somebody to blame.
Yeah.
And which leads to stuff like Charlottesville. So, you know, you can lay a lot of immediate blame on different people there, but the ultimate problem is debt, as with so many other things. You know, we're taking on way too much debt. That's making it hard to create the kind of wealth that satisfies enough people to give you a stable political system. And so you get Donald Trump, you get Brexit, you get lots of other things in upcoming elections that will be destabilizing, and it'll be seen as kind of one-off craziness on the part of the electorate by the elites who think things are going real well. But the fact is, things aren't going real well for 60% of the population right now. And that's why, because they don't feel like they're being heard, they feel like they're being harvested by rich people now.
Yeah.
So they're willing to throw a hand grenade into the middle of the political system.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not going to be an end to this until we get our finances in order. And there's no sign whatsoever that that's going to happen anytime soon. So we should expect more of this going forward. Each election is going to be, you know, crazy in some way by past standards. Most rallies and protests are going to carry with them the potential for the kinds of stuff that we saw in Charlottesville. And it's going to go on until the system spins out of control one way or another. You know, it's a really scary prospect for the coming 10 years, but it's also a really predictable prospect. You know, historically, anytime a society takes on way too much debt, fun times ensue. Yes. Go all the way back to the Roman Empire when they ended up with a hyperinflation and price controls in which there was the death penalty for a merchant not following in his father's footsteps and keeping the store open, even though the store couldn't be operated profitably in a hyperinflation with price controls. And numerous examples since that time have basically gone the same way, where countries borrow too much money, or they create too much paper currency, or they do some combination of those two things. And that leads to some kind of a crisis, which involves regime change and monetary instability and a monetary reset when they end up having to go back to sound money. We will get there, but it's possible that the road is going to be extremely rocky. And, you know, the other thing that we haven't mentioned yet is geopolitics. Mm-hmm. The last couple of weeks have had two or three confrontations that could easily turn into a shooting war just kind of bubble up. You know, we're talking about fire and chaos in North Korea, and they're talking about nuking Guam, which we have, where we have a military base. And China and India are beefing up their forces on their shared border and talking about each pushing the other one back, you know, which could involve Chinese and Indians killing each other, you know, both of whom are nuclear powers.
They've done it
and
before.
Have really big armies.
They have done it before. There's like two or three Sino-Indian wars in the past. And they've, I think China's won most of them, but that was before the India was a nuclear power. So, you know, you got to wonder what's going on here. You know, the world's becoming more unstable by the day.
Yeah. You don't want to win a conventional battle with a nuclear power, right? Because then they have to escalate.
Yeah.
And their escalation is off the charts dangerous. If they've got nuclear weapons and they decide to nuke your army that's beating their army, then where do you go from there? And that's the kind of stuff that can see miscalculations are what cause so many wars, where mm-hmm. two sides misunderstand the intentions and the staying power of the other. And that leads to extreme things, which leads to even more extreme things. And then you get World War One. You know, that's kind of what happened then, where you had all these interlocking secret alliances that that pulled a lot of overconfident powers into something that that lasted for 4 years and killed, 20 or 30 million people?
Yeah.
Some insane
madness.
Number.
It was
and
madness.
Just traumatized a whole generation.
God, yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Craziness.
And that was before nuclear weapons. Imagine World War One or World War Two, where a couple of the contending powers had nuclear weapons. You know, it would have just been it would have been orders of magnitude worse than it was, as bad as it was, you know. And we've got a lot of that stuff going on now.
It would have been faster, though. It would have been a lot faster.
Okay. That is the one upside of weapons of mass destruction.
Get it over
doesn't
with.
Take long for them to do their thing, you know.
Get it over with fast.
God. Anyhow, we can hope we get through this without some kind of a major confrontation that involves people killing other people, and then go straight to the monetary reset. But historically, that's infrequent. You know, usually there's geopolitical turmoil and financial turmoil feeding off of each other and turning it into something really big and really serious. You know, as a father of draft age sons, this terrifies me. I hate to see us heading this way, because we're handing our kids a world that that's a lot darker and a lot scarier than the one we grew up in. As amazing as that sounds, you know, we grew up in the Cold War, Kerry. When we were on the verge of nuclear Armageddon, and what's coming is scarier in a lot of ways than that.
Duck and cover. Remember going into the auditorium and putting your jacket on the floor and putting your head under the seat in front of you. And it's like, what were we doing? I was clueless. I had no idea what we were doing there.
Oh, so you actually did that?
Yeah, we had one of them. I remember one air raid drill growing up. One.
So, well, that would have helped realistically, right? If you're in the gym and you put your head between your knees.
Yeah, the gym is
a nuclear bomb hits nearby.
I guess that's what they meant by safe places. That was our safe place back then, right?
God.
Yeah, it's madness. You know, we just see constant total madness. And, you know, it's just you come up with these outcomes that really make no sense whatsoever. And yet, just to keep the masses quiet, I guess.
Well, right? and it's also a really interesting example from a theoretical standpoint of technology outpacing morality, right? We're now able to destroy huge numbers of people in an eye blink, and more people are getting that technology. It used to be that nuclear weapons were hard to make. It used to be that the information systems weren't so intertwined that somebody with a virus in the Ukraine can shut down a power grid on the other side of the world. Well, now they can, you know, and it used to be that nuclear weapons were so hard to deliver that you couldn't do an EMP attack. Well, now you can, you know, you fly a plane high up in the air, set off a nuclear weapon, and you've wiped out all the electronics for the area in which the pulse from that nuclear weapon extends, you know, so you can send people back to the 1700s. Except that there are way more people now than there were back then. So most of them have to starve if you do something like that. And that technology is spreading to a lot of other people too. Very, very scary world that we live in now.
We could have been building shielded electronics for the past two decades easily. They knew this thing existed, and yet we never did. I mean, what is wrong with them?
Well, you know who has shielded electronics is the bunkers where our elites will go when something like this looks like it's going to happen. You know, they're going to be living in, you know, relative luxury with all their electronics intact while the rest of us starve.
That makes me feel good.
There's a series of books. I 1 Minute After, I think, is the first in the series.
Yeah.
And it's about that. And it's pretty terrifying. Somebody sets off an EMP over the U.S. And we're instantly back to using horses to pull plows and starving, you know, and stealing each other's food and murdering each other and stuff.
Yeah, well, that's no doubt what would happen. No question, that's what would happen.
Yeah, it could. Anyhow, you know, if you look at stuff like this from only the risk angle, it's very dark. But there's an investment play here that if we don't blow ourselves up is actually really exciting and attractive, and that is hard assets in a fiat currency world. You know, gold and silver will go up dramatically in the same way that Bitcoin has gone up lately. Once it becomes clear to enough people that the monetary system is spinning out of control, you know, and that'll could happen anytime. But, you know, the voices that you hear now coming from some actually serious places, too, calling for basically the elimination of the concept of government debt and for governments going forward to just finance themselves by printing money, you know, just skip the whole borrowing and paying interest on the debt.
Print the difference.
Process.
Just print the difference, basically, is what we're talking about, right?
Yeah. And so governments will spend as much money as they need to do what they have to do. The central bank will create enough money to cover that. And there will be no taxes, no government debt out there, nobody having to pay interest on the debt via taxes or anything like that. And the system will run beautifully.
That's perfect to me. I love it. Hey, the idea of not paying any taxes, actually, you're going to pay an inflation tax, but you're never really going to know what that tax is. Right? You'll never know.
The key phrase in all this is that the government will spend as much as it needs to spend to do what it needs to do, you know, meaning the government gets to decide how much it spends.
Right.
And so you get something that's really just a more extreme version of what we have now, where the governments do get to pretty much decide what they're going to spend, and then they borrow the rest with total impunity. This time, they don't even have to borrow. They don't even have to provide an accounting, really, in any understandable way, of what they're spending, which means that every election cycle, they will spend whatever it takes to get the incumbents reelected. Every geopolitical challenge out there will be met with insane amounts of military spending because they can, you know, so the value of the currency will just crater in that kind of a situation. And you get the periodic hyperinflations that we've gone through for the past 3,000 years whenever governments get control of the monetary system. Yeah. So here we go. And in each and every time, and there have been dozens and dozens of times, gold and silver hold their value.
What about Bitcoin
relative to local currencies?
Bitcoin going to protect us this time? time?
Well, cryptocurrencies are a new idea, so we don't have any historical precedent for this. And one interesting thing about Bitcoin, well, two, first that it's gaining acceptance and it's soaring in price. And the other is that once they started bumping up against the limitation inherent in the algorithm of the supply of Bitcoins, in other words, it was only able to increase at a predetermined rate, and then it was going to be capped at some point in the future at a fairly low level. In other words, the original design called for a limited supply of that currency. Once they started bumping up against the consequences of a limited supply of currency, they decided to do this thing called a fork, where they split the currency into two, and in that way allow the supply of those two currencies taken together to grow. And now you combine that with all the new currencies being created via something called ICOs, initial coin offerings.
Right.
And the total supply of cryptocurrencies is soaring right now. And it doesn't seem that there's necessarily a limit on the total supply of cryptocurrencies out there. And so does that mean that we'll have a runaway hyperinflation in cryptocurrencies where their value just plunges because so many have been brought to market and the supply of the existing ones have been expanded beyond the original template? And so they act pretty much like the dot-com stocks in 2000 through 2002, where the value just collapses because everybody realizes that that there are just way too many of them out there and not all of them are valid, you know, and no, that could happen too, because that's how new ideas tend to be introduced. You know, there's this huge hype cycle where everybody thinks they're the greatest thing in the world and they're going to go from here to taking over the world. But it doesn't work that way. You have to go through the valley of despair and realize that the hype was overdone in the short run. And then everybody gets disillusioned, but the original concept remains valid and percolates along and then eventually ends up doing whatever it was going to do. You know, that's the way it went with tech stocks. Everybody thought they'd go up forever in 1999. And by 2002, everybody thought they would go down forever, you know, and eventually, you know, tech companies have done really well. So that might be the case with cryptocurrencies, where we have to go through this boom and bust cycle before we get to the point where the blockchain becomes a dominant way of moving value from one place to another. We'll see. It's going to be really interesting. And I don't think even the guys who are creating and managing these currencies have the slightest idea how it plays out and on what time frame.
We've been watching this for a long time here, John, already. You know, at least since I started the show for 7 years. And when I first became aware of it shortly thereafter, and nobody knows what these things are going to do. We just don't know. We have no idea whatsoever. I wish there was a way to know, but there just isn't.
Yeah. But the concept is really attractive. You know, leaving aside how they play out in the marketplace, the idea of privately created currency that is more efficient as a storage of value and a value transfer mechanism than the current fiat currency / fractional reserve banking system, and is independent of governments and politics. That's really an attractive idea. You know, that's part of the libertarian fantasy world that we all hold out there as an ideal. And
that's
because of that,
you know, what's his name? Rothbard, the concept of competing currencies, right? It's what we all know and love.
A free market in currencies is a great idea because it removes the power to secretly tax us via inflation on part of governments. You know, they have to get real value somewhere in order to run themselves. And they have to do that more or less honestly by either taxing people or by creating their own currencies in a really public way, but in a really reasonable way that make those currencies attractive in the marketplace versus the other currencies that are being created out there. That's a fantastic limitation on government power. And if it works, it'll lead to a much better world. You know, some kind of gold-based cryptocurrency where physical gold stored in a safe vault is the base money of the system. And then a cryptocurrency linked to that gold is the medium of exchange. That's very attractive. You know, gold bugs love it. Libertarians love it. And we'll see if it's technologically possible.
I'm in favor of tulip-backed currencies. You know, I think if you get enough tulip bulbs there, because look, tulip bulbs were at one time during the 1600s in Holland, they were like, forget it. They were the dot-coms of their era. So if we could base a cryptocurrency with tulips, I think we'd get the best of all possible worlds. Don't you, John?
Well, that's, you know, obviously a joke, but not not as far-fetched. You know, in terms of bubble economics, we're getting into that realm.
You know what I'm saying here, right?
With a lot of things. And cryptocurrencies might be one of those things where it ends up looking a lot like the tulip bubble. I hope not, but, you know, it's completely possible that we go that way for a while.
I'm going to create a new one called Tulip Coin. And I'm going to back it with tulip bulbs. I mean, what could be better? I mean, you really have a hard asset. Well, maybe not so hard, but some asset underpinning the currency, right? It's what we want. It's nuts.
Gary, I saw one the other day.
Yeah,
it's insane. I don't know if this is a joke or not. That's how wild this market is. But it was called Bitcoin.
Bitcoin.
And it was
is that Israeli
Jewish
based
cryptocurrency?
Yeah, it's based in Israel, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Hey, where does it end here? I mean, look, it's money. Money has a value if it's accepted by the public as having value and being a medium of exchange and, you know, all the other factors that make money. Divisibility, durability, which these things don't have durability. One EMP and, you know, your Bitcoin's not worth the bits that the computer can't generate anymore because it's black, because it's become a paperweight or a doorstopper. And, you know, that's it. So I'm just, I'm all for cryptocurrencies, but I'm just not convinced about their efficacy at this point. They're too new to really be saying that this is it, the next transformation. It'd be nice if they were, perhaps, but we're not quite there yet.
Well, see, that's the scary thing about cyber war and hackers, though, Carrie, is that our current money is really, in a way, a cryptocurrency because all of it is plastic or online. Yeah. You know, how much cash do you have in your wallet relative to your net worth?
Much.
And most of your net worth is out there in brokerage accounts and credit lines, stuff like that, that can be hacked very easily or can be brought down if the system is brought down by hackers or an EMP or something like that. So you're instantly impoverished today. You know, forget about your Bitcoin balance, but your PayPal account, your brokerage account, those things cease to be accessible if there's a cyber attack that takes down the banking system, even temporarily. So, it's not clear even how today's system manages in one of these new age warfare scenarios. So it could be that silver coins stored in your basement or something like that is going to be the most effective currency at some point for some period in the future. And so I think we should be planning in those terms. You don't want fiat currency either in the electronic version or even in physical cash to be the dominant part of your financial life because those things are at risk by so many different things from so many different directions that you really need some kind of physical wealth that can't be affected by all of this stuff that we're talking about, by government hyperinflation and currency resets and by technology making, you know, electronic currency more and more vulnerable. You want to be as far away from that risk as possible. And you do that with precious metals held in a safe place.
Right.
So that's one thing everybody should be looking at. And that's the takeaway from all of this is that you need some physical money.
Yeah, real money. Not fake money, real money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, absolutely.
We're in for interesting times. No doubt about it, John. Hey, questions, comments for John, myself, KL at Kerry Lutz. Twitter feeds at Kerry Lutz. Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. John's site is dollarcollapse.com. Our site is financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for both our newsletters. I'm blasting one out today, promise. John, hey, let's see where Bitcoin goes to next week. If it's at 5,000, then we're really going to have to stand up and take notice, aren't we?
Well, it could easily be 5,000 next week. This is a, you know, it's either a time, a concept whose time has come, or a huge bubble. Either way.
Or both.
You
or
get both. Some serious price action.
Hey, there's still tulips all these years later after the tulip bust. They're still selling tulips. Yes. Not for much, yes, but they're still selling them. You can get them in the supermarket. So anyways, hey, John, we will catch up with you next week, and be well.
Thanks, Gary. You too.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.